Well, hello there, and welcome to another episode of Real Estate Investing with Jay Connor. I'm Jay Connor, your host, also known as the Private Money Authority. And here on the show, we talk about all things that relate to real estate investing, single family houses, commercial deals, self-storage, land, small apartments, big apartments, flipping, rent to own, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. We also talk about how to get your deals funded without relying on local banks or mortgage companies, how to sell houses fast, how to automate your business to where you're running your business and your business isn't running you. And I have fantastic guests here on the show. Today is no exception. But before I introduce my guest today, I've got a free gift for you to check out. And that is, if you're looking for more funding for your deals, particularly here in the midst of COVID-19, and you don't want to rely on banks, mortgage companies, or any kind of traditional funding, then I have got an on-demand free training for you right now on the internet. It's only about 60 minutes long, but this training will show you the five easy and quick steps to get the funding for your real estate deals, again, without relying on your any of your own money, your own credit, etc. So you, after the show, you can check it out at www.jayconner.com/moneypodcast. That's jayconner.com/moneypodcast. Well, my special guest today began his career in real estate in the competitive New York City, can you believe, real estate market. And he was working as a broker leasing these ground floor retail units. Well, in that experience, he saw and learned the true potential of real estate that can really transform lives. Now, although he was limited in his means and the amount of money that he had available to him at the time, he spent his time reading, attending seminars, networking, and hanging around very accomplished entrepreneurs, which, by the way, is good advice for all of us. And he was learning that being resourceful was the ultimate path to becoming successful. What do you mean by resourceful? He's going to tell us. So with this knowledge, he embarked on building his real estate company and empire in Charleston, South Carolina, where he had relocated in search of a better quality of life. Now, he got in Charleston back in 2008, wow, after the real estate bubble had burst, and he quickly adapted, and he was using a credit card, increased his credit card limit, and then wrote himself a balance transfer check to acquire the cheapest property he could find. We're going to get him to tell us that story about how in the world he was able to use a credit card to buy his first house at only 23 years old. Well, anyway, armed with his personal investment and a lot of sweat equity, he transformed a rundown duplex and turned a profit on his first deal. Then he took those proceeds, reinvested them, and while seeking private capital to expand his growing company. Well, my special guest is the CEO and founder of Legacy Wealth Holdings, which is a real estate investment company that acquires and transforms distressed apartment buildings into high yield assets for their own portfolio. So with that, folks, I'm so excited to have as my guest today, my friend, fellow mastermind member and real estate investor, Mr. Tim Brotz. Welcome to the show, Tim.
Hey, appreciate you having me here, Jay. Excited to be here, man. I always looked up to you, and I'm super pumped to be here and be chatting with you and sharing some knowledge with your audience. So appreciate you having me, man.
Absolutely. Well, I'm so excited to have you on because, I mean, in just a few short years, you've got such a wide variety of experience. You have put your portfolio, I mean, my lands, Your current portfolio exceeds 4,000 units and is north with a valuation of more than $350 million, right?
That is correct. It's kind of crazy, right?
So I'm not going to ask my questions in logical sequence. I'm just going to do stream of consciousness with you. How long did it take from you starting in commercial, doing commercial deals, to going to a portfolio of 4,000 units? I mean, is that a 10-year stretch? Is that a 5-year stretch? What is that?
First started studying real estate and learning about it in 2005 when I was in college. I became a real estate agent in 2007. invested in my first property in 2009, bought my first apartment building at the end of 2012, and that was an 8-unit building.
Hey, you answered my question. That's fast.
I mean, yeah, it's about 8 years since I bought my first apartment.
Yeah, and now you've got 4,000 doors or units, right? Yeah, that is amazing. So let's start with your journey. Tell us your story of getting into real estate and how it has progressed, your journey, and how's it grown?
Yeah, well, I think we all want it to go faster than it usually does, right? And that was not any different in my case. I was going through college 2003 to 2007 when the market was going crazy before, and everybody's making money in real estate, and I was a money motivated kid at the age of 20 years old. And so I had, you know, one of these painting companies in the summer, ran a bunch of crews with my friends. We did a bunch of landscaping also. And then I interned for one of the largest home builders in the country and just realized I wanted to be a real estate investor. But I thought everybody got started in real estate and owning real estate by becoming a real estate agent. And so I'm from Cleveland, Ohio originally, but I moved out to New York City because my brother was living out there at the time. And after college, I got my real estate license and I started brokering, just like you had mentioned in the opening, commercial and retail offices and retail spaces in Manhattan. And I didn't really know what I was doing. I was just kind of like doing the labor of going and finding, you know, businesses that wanted to expand and then handing them off to somebody who knew what they were doing, or finding a landlord who wanted to lease their space and then handed them off to somebody that knew what was doing in our brokerage firms. So I was just really the workhorse, right? And so I knew enough that when I closed my first deal, it took about 8-9 months to close it, and it was 400 square feet, and we signed a lease for $10,000 a month.
Woo! Yeah,
on this retail space. 12-year lease term, 4% annual increases. And I start doing the math, and I'm like, holy cow, this landlord's going to make almost $2 million for doing something once, and they're going to get paid on it for the next 12 years. Like, I'm on the wrong side of the coin. I need to be owning real estate instead of brokering it. And so I moved down to Charleston, South Carolina, just for better quality of life and some good weather. And when I got down there is when the market crashed and everything was crumbling. And I was going through all these courses and seminars and learning all as much as I possibly could. And when I was about to pull the trigger on buying something, that, you know, the market crumbles. And I was like, I just showed up to the party. Everybody's leaving, right? And so nonetheless, nobody was giving money to a punk 23-year-old kid who'd never done a deal before in the worst housing economy ever. And I had to get creative. And I think a lot of people say, hey, I can't do something because I don't have, you know, the time, I don't have the money, I don't have the knowledge, I don't have the resources. And I heard Tony Robbins say one time, he goes, resourcefulness is the ultimate resource. If you're resourceful, you can find time and money and knowledge and all the other resources. And I think that's something I've always kind of done, is I don't let somebody tell me I can't do something. I ask questions about how can I do something. I think when you ask good questions, it leads you down a path of getting good answers. It's like Google, right? I can Google search restaurants in Ohio, and it brings up every restaurant in Ohio. And then I could Google search restaurants in Cleveland, Ohio, and it refines it to only Cleveland. That Italian restaurants in Cleveland, Ohio, and it refines it even more. And so the more defined of a question that I think you ask, the more defined of an answer that you're going to get. So I said, hey, I can't get money from the banks. I can't get money from traditional lenders. All my friends are drunk in bars right now because they're all 23 years old at the time, and they're blowing all their money at the bars, and nobody's going to lend me money. Like, how can I get access to capital that I already have access? And I thought, well, I have a couple $1,000s saved up in my bank account. That wasn't enough. But maybe I could get my credit card company to increase my limit. And I called them up and I said, hey, I'm about to make a big purchase. Are you guys willing to increase my limit? And they said, how much do you need? I said, $100,000. And they said, absolutely not. Like, you've been a great customer for about 15 months, but that's just not going to happen. And I said, all right, well, how much can you give me? And they give me 15 grand, 1.5. And so I found the cheapest house in all of Charleston. This is after the market tanked in 2009 now. And I bought it essentially with a balance transfer check on my credit card. I bought it for $14,000 and put all the sweat equity in there.
To make sure everybody understands, tell everybody, what is a balance transfer check? Because we probably got some listeners that might want to use that strategy.
Well, it was, you know, it's essentially something that credit card companies use in order to say, hey, go from your MasterCard over to Visa. And if you transfer your balance over to us, we'll let you, you know, give you a balance transfer check to go write a check over to your MasterCard. And then we'll just put that balance over here on your Visa. And so, I don't know if they still do it. I haven't used one in a while, but, that was like a big thing back in 2008, 2009. And so I was able to get my credit card limit increased. I got them to send me these perforated checks, and I just wrote it to myself instead of like transferring a balance or anything like that. I just wrote myself a check for $14,900 and, maxed out my credit card. I put all that money in my bank account, and then I went and bought this house. They were asking 25 grand. I got it for, I offered 12, right? They go, yeah, they came back at 20. I came back at 14, and we ended up cutting a deal on it. So, and then I personally did all the work. You know, I'm YouTubing how to change out carpet and light fixtures and plumbing repairs and all this stuff. And I turned around and sold it in a little over 100 days, and I made about $14,000 on it net. And I was like, I don't even know what I'm doing. I'm making money in the worst housing market ever. So then I got into wholesaling, right? Wholesaling, I learned a little bit more about that. And I met amazing people in wholesaling who had money and were buying deals from me. I could make a couple of bucks on it. And eventually what happened was they said, hey, this kid's got a decent work ethic and he knows how to find a good deal. Hey, Tim, I don't have the bandwidth to take on more projects myself, but I still have more money. How about I lend you money? And we just come up with some sort of like equity split on the deal. And that's how I started doing several deals. Probably, I don't know, the first 250 deals I did was some sort of equity split with private investors. And so I built up a small portfolio and ended up moving back from Charleston, South Carolina, back up to Cleveland, Ohio, and partnered up pretty much exclusively with a couple of guys who had a traditional business, made a lot of money in it, and invested with me. And so from 2012 to 2015, built up a portfolio of, I don't know, about 130, 140 units in Cleveland. That's when I bought my first apartment building. That partnership, though, went south in 2015, 2016, and we ended up liquidating everything. So I had to press the reset button on my business, and it's not exciting to do when that takes a lot of work to kind of get the plane off the ground. And I'm like, oh man, I got to start all over. But really it was a blessing in disguise where it allowed me to really spread my wings and do some other stuff. And people came out of the woodwork saying, hey man, I've been wanting to partner with you. I've been wanting to do some deals with you. I've been wanting to lend you money. And it opened me up big time. I got into a mastermind for the first time in 2015. And that was just like mind boggling, the opportunities that, and the connections that came from that. And so I liquidated my whole portfolio. And in August of 2015, I started building my current portfolio. Although they took all my property away, or not took it all away, but we had liquidated it all. They couldn't take the insights, right? They couldn't take the mindset. They couldn't take the information. And I think that's a really a key piece of once you learn, you get educated on how to do this stuff, you could do it over and over and over again. So I started from scratch in August of 2015. And here we are 5 years later. And I have a $350 million portfolio. It's 90% apartments and about 10% is some other asset classes, office, a little bit of mixed use like retail. I have several self-storage facilities and a couple of vacation homes too.
So really these 4,000 units, you've built all that in just the past less than 5 years.
Yep. Just shy of 5 years.
Yeah. So you're starting from scratch. Well, you're not starting from scratch because you still own the real estate in between your ears, yep. Right? And the experience you got, et cetera. So tell us that story. How do you start from scratch? Looking for and attracting capital. So, you know, I've done a ton of that myself. I teach it myself. I really want to hear your story. So how do you start raising the capital? And on these commercial deals, how do you start finding the deals? And then if you can keep it at the 30,000 foot level, what's a structure of a deal look like? How do you structure a deal? And I'm assuming this portfolio, were those all existing apartments, et cetera, that were distressed and you turned them around?
For the most part, we do a little bit of new construction also, but most of it, I'd say north of 70% of it is definitely existing property. Maybe 75, 80% is existing property.
Let's start with raising the capital. Yeah, what's your strategy on raising the capital? Because that's a lot of capital.
Yep. We've raised, I don't raise money from institutions or hedge funds and REITs and stuff like that. I raise money from individuals, right? Somebody who's got $100,000 in 401k or some entrepreneur who just exited their business and they're sitting on a couple million bucks.
Yep. That's what I do.
That's everybody that I raise money from. They're easy to work with. They're too busy to complain, you know, or like breathe down your neck about what's going on with the deal. As long as their checks hit and their deposits are made, they like going back to doing what they're really good at, and they understand leveraging other people's efforts. And they're really good at making money. They're not that good at investing it. So they put it with somebody who does know how to invest it. And then I can help them deploy it and make a good return. So here's what I found, because I've done a lot of different things. I had a big turnkey business. We were flipping about 100. Like when I get out of that past business partnership, I went back into wholesaling and I got into like turnkey of flipping houses because I needed to build up my cash reserves again. And so while I was doing that whole process, I learned that there's some people, there's essentially two types of investors out there that are looking for two different types of returns. One is like a debt return, which is a very predictable, I deploy my money and I make 12% return on my investment at like clockwork. And I invest $100,000 with somebody, I make $1,000 a month, and I make 12% annual return on my money. That's great. It's very predictable. There's no surprises there. But at the end of the day, they're not building wealth, right? They're making a good return, and their army of money has a bunch of other soldiers now that they can then redeploy, and they can make more and more money. And that's one way of doing it. And then there's other people that I found that like the equity investment side, where there's equity upside. They can sell the property, double their money, but there's also equity downside where they could lose money. And there's not a lot of predictability in consistent monthly payments in that regard. So I've realized there were two types of people, two types of investments, and there wasn't really anything in the middle. What I started doing on the single family side is I started structuring it in a way that was a no-brainer. I said, hey, listen, I'll pay you either 12% on your money or 15% of the profit, whichever is greater. It's a no-brainer. Worst case scenario, I make 12% of my money and potentially there's equity upside in this thing without any downside on the equity. So that was a no-brainer. And then when I started investing in apartment buildings, I did something similar. I realized that I couldn't pay somebody 12% because we're talking about big dollar amounts and it would really eat up the cash flow, especially on these not performing apartment buildings that are heavily distressed. So what I ended up doing is I offered a little bit less, you know, 8 to 10% fixed return on their investment. And my whole model is based on flipping houses, right? Like I never went to a course. I never on commercial real estate. I didn't get a real estate degree from some Ivy League school. My grandparents didn't own a bunch of commercial real estate. I just learned about it from the School of Hard Knocks. And so what I ended up doing was I took the formula of I got to be all in for 65% of the after repair value. And that's what I need to be able to buy and renovate these houses for in order to sell it and make a profit. I took that exact same philosophy and formula and put it into apartment buildings. So an apartment building is very predictable of what it's going to be worth because it's all based on the income approach, not on, you know, sales comparables. So I know what it'll rent for. I know exactly what the expenses are. And so I can just figure out if I improve it and I get it fully occupied, the good management in place, it'll generate this much money of net operating income. And in that area, it'll appraise at this sort of a cap rate, which is kind of like a multiple on the NOI. And so it's very predictable. If it's going to be worth $10 million, I need to be all in for $6.5 million. And if it needs $1 million worth of work, I need to be able to, my maximum allowable offer is $5.5 million. Does that make sense? So
that makes sense.
The difference is I don't sell the property. I turn around, I refinance it. So I'll go to the you know, Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, or an insurance company or CMBS, and I'll get a loan once the property is stabilized, meaning it's fully occupied, good management's in place, and then I'll put a loan on it for 70% of that new value. So if I'm all in, it's worth 10 million, I'm all in for 6.5, my new loan is 7 million. That means I'm able to pay back my investors, able to pay off my short-term construction loan, and I just put long-term debt, fixed interest rate debt in place, and now all my chips are off the table, right? Now we can just sit on this thing, let the tenants pay rent, covers all the operating expenses, covers all the debt service, pays down our mortgage, property appreciates over time, and that is how real wealth is built. So when I got into apartment buildings, I took my investors and I started paying them 8 to 10% of a fixed return while their money was invested. And then They get all their money back at the time of the refinance. Let's say it's 18 months later. And then I give them equity in the deal forever. Even though all their money's back in their own pocket, they keep maybe 20% of the deal forever. And so that then incentivizes them where now they see me as a long-term partner. They see me as somebody who's like, you know what? If somebody dangles a 12% carrot in front of their face, they're not going to go with it because they're like, no, Tim's my partner, right? I have equity and deals with him that we're going to be partners for the next 10 years. And it allows them to just keep on rolling their money forward with me where they make a good fixed return. Plus they have the equity upside, and it's a win-win all around them.
So do you structure the deal with your private lenders? Are they investing in a fund?
Yeah. So it's not like a general open-ended fund. Every deal that I do, every apartment building I buy is its own investment, registered SEC investment with the federal SEC, Securities and Exchange Commission. So every deal I do is its own. It's its own entity. It's its own registration. So I only raise on a deal by deal basis. So people aren't, you know, it's not like a stock where it's, or a mutual fund where it's spread across many different properties. It's a single property. So 123 Main Street will be owned by 123 Main Street LLC. Here's what the numbers are on 123 Main Street, what it's going to look like and what it's going to generate for income to the LLC. And then the investors, they invest in that LLC and they're actual equity owners in the LLC. So they get a K-1 at the end of the year and yeah, works that way.
So you raise capital for its own project every time, right? Mm-hmm. So does most of your capital for a project that you're, you know, looking to do, do most of those funds come from existing private lenders that you might have recently paid off from a refinance deal?
Yeah. So, it's we were joking about it before we kind of came online and we said, hey, you're either deal heavy or you're money heavy, and very rarely both at the same time. Right. So I think the most important thing you can be doing as a real estate investor, the only three activities that matter are sourcing deals, sourcing money, and refining your operations, right? If you're doing those three things at all times, those are the revenue generating activities that you need to be focused on all the time. So we are always sourcing deals. We are always sourcing money, and we are always trying to refine our operations and tighten up that ship. And so sometimes we have a refinance and we're heavy on liquidity and we can roll all of our investors into that new project without having to raise any outside capital. Other times, like we had a bunch of refis that were supposed to pop during this whole COVID mess, right? And they all got delayed. And so now they're all looking good, right? Knock on wood. But there was a time frame where we were still buying some deals earlier part of this year. And we had these refis that were supposed to pop and didn't. So we had to raise a bunch of outside capital. But you know, it also happens where somebody invests with you in one deal, they have more money set aside, they want to diversify across multiple different assets, multiple different properties. And a lot of our existing investors came in on all those other projects, knowing that their other funds are going to be pretty liquid over the course of the latter part of this year.
So when you've got a project that that you're getting ready to do, what's the logistics of getting the word out to, like when you're raising new capital, mm-hmm. what's your funnel look like? Like with me, my funnel is I'm all the time educating. In fact, you may have heard me say in the past, Tim, I've never asked anybody for money. Mm-hmm. I raise a ton of capital without asking for money. I educate and I teach. And once they get taught and enlightened and they know about self-directed IRAs and they know about private money and how the program works, if they've got investment capital or retirement funds, they're going to be chasing me, right?
Exactly.
But where do you go and what do you do?
Yep. So I'm very active on social media. So if you follow me on social media, I know we're connected on social media. You'll see me always talking about buying apartment buildings, how I structure the deal, what the returns look like for the overall project. When you're syndicating capital, you got to be very careful to stay in compliance with the SEC guidelines. You can't just go out and tell people, hey, I'll pay you 12% because it's not secured with a first lien position on a property. So because of that, you can't go out and just generally solicit. you know, and as soon as you take two investors and put them into a single deal, you're creating a security. So it needs to be registered with the SEC. Does everybody do it? No. Do I do it? Yes, because I have a lot of eyeballs on me because I do the education stuff too. But I think educating people is the purest way of showing what you do, how you do it, and just naturally building trust and building relationships with people and confidence and respect that they respect you as the authority of private money, right? And so those are the two keys. In order to raise capital, you need somebody's respect and you need somebody's trust. If you don't have those two things, it's gonna be very, very difficult to raise money. And educating people, whether that's through social media or through formal courses, creates both of those things. You're spending time with them. They know you, they know your core values, they know what you're all about. And you're obviously teaching, you're standing up in front of the stage. You must be an authority. You must be an expert at what you do. So there's a lot of respect that comes with that as well. So I think the whole education piece is a genius way of doing what you're doing. So so I do some of that on social media. I do have, you know, a coaching platform on teaching investors how to scale from residential into apartments. And that generates a lot of capital. But I also just hang out in masterminds and I hang out with people who have capital, who have money, who are really good at making money, but not good at deploying money, right? Like most entrepreneurs are really, really good at making money and then they blow it on stupid stuff. They're not good at saving it. They're not good at investing it. So I'm able to come in and be like, listen, man, you can buy as many liabilities as you want, but first you got to buy assets, right? Like here's what the system, what the process looks like to generate real wealth instead of just getting rich. Let's get you wealthy. And so that's what I do.
Yeah, you just said that, you know, you just hang around people that's got money. And, you know, I've been saying for a long time, the more money you wallow in, the more sticks to you.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
So I practice and I also teach people to go where the money is. You know, sometimes they'll say, Jay, you know, you talk about your warm market or relationship money. All my people are broke. I don't know anybody with money. Well, wake up and smell the roses. How about let's go meet some people that's got money? And so obviously, along with the education piece, networking is critical. Mm-hmm. Networking is critical to, you know, to speak to the point of what you just said. Well, Tim, we are just about out of time, but thank you so much for taking taking the time to come on the show here. And I know that there is a percentage of my audience that would like to follow you and learn some more from you. So let me ask you for two things. If people want to learn how to get into commercial investing themselves and learn from you and your education company, where would they go to learn more about that?
Yeah, well, I appreciate it, Jay. Thanks again for having me, man. Again, and I appreciate all the value that you continue to put out there and your abundance mentality. So thanks for having me here. If you guys want to connect with me, I'm very active on social media. Find me on Facebook and Instagram and follow me, connect with me, send me a friend request there. And then my website is legacywealthholdings.com, legacywealthholdings.com. And you can learn more about the coaching side of things and how we can potentially do deals together. I'm always, you know, buying properties, selling properties, joint venturing on projects. So if you guys come across a good deal and want to talk about something or just need some insight, I mean, we're happy to support and offer education any way that we can. So, yeah, appreciate you having me, man.
Absolutely. And for everyone that is listening in on iTunes, Google Play, and our other audio platforms, the spelling of Tim Brotts, his name, of course, you got the Tim, T-I-M, but his last name, if you're looking for him on social media, is B-R-A-T-Z. That's Tim Brotts, B-R-A-T-Z. Well, Tim, I look forward to seeing you at our upcoming mastermind meeting, which hopefully is going to be in person. I haven't heard the definitive word on that yet.
Yep.
But in any case, it's been a pleasure to have you on, man. I appreciate you so much.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. Take care.
There you have it, folks. Another show. I'm Jay Connor, the Private Money Authority, wishing you all the best. Here's to taking your real estate investing business to the next level. And I'll see you on the next show.